There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to today's SL Man podcast. I'm Georgie Corridge-Cole, Sherlock's founder and CEO. And I'm joined today by Heather Steele, Sherlock's managing lifestyle editor. And two ex-rugby players. Welcome George Cruz and Dominic Day. George has over 14 years of experience as a professional rugby player, winning 3 European titles and 4 Premiership trophies for Saracens, achieving over 45 caps for England during 2 World Cups and a British and Irish Lions tour. Dom was a professional rugby player also for 14 years. He played in the 2015 Rugby World Cup for Wales and has over 250 top flight games to his name. His long career has taken him around the globe to places including Australia, Japan, and finishing his career as a proud member of Saracens. Together, the pair started CBD brand 4-5 in 2018. And we're going to talk more about 4-5 a bit later, but in essence, it helps people lead healthier, happier lives through the power of CBD and vitamin supplements using really high quality plant extracts and ingredients. We're going to come on to 4-5 later. I'm genuinely a big fan and I've taken your hydration tablets this morning after I worked out. So
perfect. You look glowing. That's
true, I'm feeling very hydrated.
Yesterday, although, oof.
Can you talk to us both about, I mean, Heather is the rugby fan.
Yeah. I'm more the rugby fan, I'd say. My dad, he's Scottish, actually, I'm afraid to say. Hey, we won on Saturday, which doesn't always happen. Yeah. So that was good. But I did watch the England game as well. Basically, if England aren't playing Scotland, I'm an England fan. But yeah. I also went to uni in Cardiff, so I've got a soft spot for Wales as well. Yeah. So I'm kind of covering all the bases
here. Well, all is okay. That is a relief. Well, my rugby knowledge extends to the All Blacks. My father lived in Hong Kong when I grew up. And nice. So we used to go to the Sevens. I chose to support the All Blacks. I think, well, there was a guy called Dallas Seymour. Do you remember him?
Goodness, he was hot. No, we're getting trumped on rugby knowledge.
Yeah, and we used to chant something about Dallas getting his kit off. Oh, wow. I did briefly meet Joe Nolomu. I say meet. I mean, that's...
Walk past you.
I think I went and said hello. Anyway, tell us, what was life like as a professional rugby player? And how did you get into rugby? What were your path? George, let's start with you. How did you become a professional rugby player? Is it in the family? Yeah. Are you an all-rounder? Are you...
Probably not a traditional route, maybe. I think a lot of people might go like academies and do all those sort of things. But essentially, my brother started playing rugby when I was younger. I got jealous of what, you know, the accolades he was getting. As you do with, I've got 2 brothers, so quite a boisterous family. And you get a bit competitive, really. I probably took it a bit too far and ended up in playing pro rugby for 14 years. So,
at what age did you realise you were good?
Yeah, probably at like 19. So I managed to get a contract, I'd say quite luckily, and then kind of grew into it off there. But I was pretty crap when I was younger, not going to lie.
So 19?
Yeah, quite late.
And are you having extra rugby and stuff, or are you just playing at school until you're 19?
I was playing lots of rugby, but it wasn't like, I wouldn't say it was more social, you know? So I was doing a lot of like club rugby on a Saturday and then school rugby on a Sunday or vice versa. So I'd put in a lot of minutes, but it was all social rugby, to be honest.
Okay, so at 19 you got a contract with
Saracens, and then basically stayed there until I went for Japan last year for a year.
And can you just run us through your rugby career? Give us the sort of condensed version.
School, Saracens for 14 years, and then Japan for 1 year. I'd say very like step loaded. So I was like...
So what do you mean Japan for 1 year?
I went to Japan last
played
year.
For Japan.
I'd played in a club.
In Japan for a club.
So you play... Is that mad? I mean...
Yeah.
Wow.
It is bizarre.
Is that, I mean, that must be... I mean, you've been, haven't you?
To Japan, yeah.
You did amazing. But I mean, like, the culture there is so different, right, from what I hear.
The Japanese love to party. That's the whole thing. They go, if anything, too hard on the booze after a very long, full day at work, I'd say.
Is that true?
Yeah, they're called, like, salarymen a lot. Like, the stereotype is a salaryman who work extremely hard in the day and then get really, really drunk in the evening. And, like, kind of everyone forgets about it. Everyone's too polite to, like, remind someone. Like, if Dom got incredibly drunk and was passed out on the street, you'd take a photo of him and you remind him about it the next day. But they are very much, you know, nothing's happened. straight back into work.
What goes into a season tour?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Glad to hear it. Okay, so you did a year in Japan. Where do the Lions come in?
Essentially, I'm quite step loaded. So I'd have done like the, I played like an LV Cup game, which would be like an FA Cup game in football. And then I played Premiership, and then I played European, then I managed to play England, and then Lions. So it was quite like linear, quite a standard process, I'd say. Playing for your country is obviously a huge deal. You know, with your family there, the crowds, the national anthem, it's a privileged position.
So how long was your rugby career?
14 years. So from 2008 to, well, last, it's about 5 months ago.
So you're 33?
32, yeah.
32.
He's only 32.
I know, yeah, mate. Jeez. I look 40, probably. I'm trying to preempt the joke that Dom's going to come out with.
Yeah, yeah, take that win right out of yourself. Exactly, yeah. Dom, what about you? So you're 27.
Yes, yeah. 27 plus 10. I think everyone expects us to be like, yeah, I want to be a rugby player since I was born. Mm. But growing up, I grew up near the seaside. I surfed and skated, and I didn't start playing rugby till I was 16. Only in like school PE lessons, just like passing about. But I only started playing because basically at 16 years old, I wanted to get drunk with my friends.
So you took up rugby?
So I took up rugby.
Yeah, yeah.
And then my PE teacher was like, you are tall. You should be a rugby player. And that was it, really. Back then, it definitely wasn't as professional as they are now at a young age. So I just got taken into academies, and it all kind of went from there. No one ever asked me if I wanted to be a rugby player.
You just said you wanted to go to that.
Like, you're Welsh, you clearly want to play rugby. So
you're Welsh in tall, right off you go.
Yeah, so that just kind of played in Wales for 6 years, went to Bath, which was beautiful.
Okay, my dad's a Bath fan as well. He was very excited. This is your dream day. He's like, they're all playing for other, like the big teams. Doing well at the moment.
Which that was interesting for me. George loves to say I'm from the Valleys. I'm not quite from the Valleys. which is nothing wrong with being from the Valleys either.
Exactly, yeah.
I can't detect the Valleys accent.
No.
Do you say toothbrush?
Give him a pint.
I do say toothbrush. Yeah, my wife says.
Do you say Poppity Ping?
Poppity Ping.
Do you know what a Poppity Ping is?
What's Poppity
Ping? It's a microwave in Welsh. Poppity Ping. Do you know what a jellyfish is? A jellyfish is Puscod Wibbly Wobbly.
You're having me on now.
That is a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah.
At least Poppity Ping rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, Poppity Ping.
Anyway, just there you go. Though. All the lingo.
Yeah, I ended up in Bath then, which was quite different to living in Wales because everyone was very, very posh.
That's lovely.
It was beautiful. Yeah, I loved it. It was a brilliant 4 years.
So you played for Bath for 4 years?
Yeah.
And then?
We played against each other a few times.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that. Yeah, do you remember before you sort of came together at Saracens playing together against each other?
Don't punch me.
Yeah. Is that allowed?
No.
I didn't think so.
No. Did you get red cards in?
No, that was in the bar after.
I was like, hang on. Yeah.
Did you like each other? Were you pals then before Saracens?
I think there was a healthy respect, but he did punch me on the field, so there was always a grudge, you know?
So the first time I came across George outside of the rugby environment, I went on holiday to Croatia with some friends.
Get out. No, come on.
George happened to be in the same area. And I was like, gosh, George, I really respect that guy. Like, I really hope I can be a player like he is. I was like, I'd love to go and talk to him. So a few drinks. I went over and he completely blanked me.
That is simply not true. That's not in my nature to do that.
He's like, who are you?
This is spice. That's all spice. There's so much tax on that. It's a joke.
Really? Well, yeah.
What's your version of events then?
I thought he was a waiter, so I asked him. No, I'm joking. No, I said hi to him. You were wearing a boot?
You were in a boot, yeah.
I was in a boot.
A boot, as in not just like wearing boots.
Yeah.
He'd hurt his ankle.
Oh, I see.
Like a moon boot, you know?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
I love that you can remember who it was because clearly that happened a lot in Croatia.
Croatia. You were in the boot.
I was in the boot, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a great looking Croatia, is it?
No.
Peacock in mind.
Bad time. Well, all the sympathy vote. Yeah.
This old thing.
So, anyway, that was the start of a friendship.
Bit of a love-hate relationship.
He loved me, I hate him.
I then went away to Japan as well. I played in Japan. I played in Melbourne for a year. And then we signed for the same team in England for Saracens.
Oh, Saracens, right.
And I cleaned his boots for 3 years. We play the same position. So George was.
You were on the bench polishing his boots.
Which is absolutely fine.
Well, it's gonna have a moment round, isn't it? And just so you've Saracens and then Japan. Well, you weren't in Japan at the same time.
No.
And is that a like rite of passage then for English players?
Or Welsh.
There's still only a handful of players that have done it.
A lot of Kiwis, a lot of Saffers, Australians, they'll go up to Japan and take it as a bit like a sabbatical year and then come back down.
Is it well paid?
Well paid, good experience.
Mm. A short season,
a lot lighter on your body, so allowed me to do a bit more business as well.
Yeah.
A lot shorter season. But also just, like, I grew up south of London, lived north of London. Yeah, it's something so different. Mm. And I always sound like a Japanese tourist board here. I'd fully recommend to get out there. It's a proper experience.
You feel the same, Dom?
Yeah.
Oh, it was amazing. Yeah. It's like when you get off the plane, it's like you're in a different planet.
First thing you'll see is you walk out and there'll be 30 people just holding a sign saying, like, go this way, and there's only one way to go.
Did you feel really, like, chilled out? Because I did when I was there, because everyone is just so polite and respectful all the time. You do get into this sort of zen mindset, really, because everyone is truly sort of, yeah.
I'm surprised it's so fun, though, because, you know, you do think it's all so well-ordered.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it is, but, when the sun goes down, it does get a bit fruity.
As long as it doesn't hit the media, it's all right.
Yeah.
And why only a year in Japan?
I signed for one and I actually stayed for two. But, like, yeah, I had to get back and... I have retired early, like, I'm 32. I could do it for another 3 or 4 years, but business-wise, we're going all right, so...
Was it a brilliant time of your career? Did you just love it? Were you pinching yourselves that, God, this is what we get to do every day? Is it a great lifestyle? Is it tough? Tell our listeners what is it like?
Being
a pro rugby player.
It is tough, but you get to go to work every day and, like, be with your mates.
Yeah,
and that's 50 like,
of them.
I guess having retired now, I definitely appreciate it a lot more. You know, you go through school, you're with your mates, and then we managed to go into rugby, where we probably should have really have grown up a bit more in that time. But you're in that environment where you just with a bunch. Your mates just doing stuff that you like.
You're spoon-fed big time. Like you go in, there'll be your nutrition supplements in front of you with your name on them. There'll be a program with your name on. You've got a physio who, you know, time slot will put you in. There'll be food. You go up, have breakfast, everything's laid out. You go, you know, shower up, all your towels, everything laid out for you.
And they wash they wash you as well.
They wash
they stroke you. They stroke you on the head and they say it's all going to be okay.
You go to the shower, Dom's there, he washes you.
Cleans your boots. Gives you a cuddle.
And it's just super, everything's laid out. It's like an extended version of school. And I think...
Do you go every day? You say you go in. Do you go every... What is it, 5 days? I mean, you play on Saturday.
Yeah, like if you got Saturday to Saturday game, you'd probably go in 4 days a week. You might come in for another for like physio recovery bits. But it's not like in season, it's all about staying fit, staying like healthy and sort of energetic and not like don't getting injured type thing.
Mm-hmm. And how does the size of a rugby player versus your speed impact you?
We're not quick.
So is it about... size and strength over speed, and like, is that the? I'm trying to think.
Well, I think
it depends on position. Does
exactly
it?
That. Right. So it's like there's a position for all different sizes. So like, obviously we're like.
But what were you two?
Tall fellas. So we play second row. We played second row.
So you're in the scrum.
In the scrum.
Hence the name of the company is 4-5. So we were. Well.
I thought that I had that question written down, but I was I bet that no. It's better to add it in organically. I bet that's why.
Yeah. So you know, the guys in front of us were shorter, wider guys. Usually, the better looking guys out the back,
strong correlation,
were faster, more ripped.
What's the correlation? More ripped.
More ripped.
Faster. Usually more skillful.
They're the guys who basically have to dodge people like us, and we're the guys who maybe have to try and run over people like them. Not run over, like carry over.
Yeah.
You know, not in a car park like that. I've got him.
Did you have any like precarious moments, injuries?
Yeah, I mean, like,
are you broken as a result?
I've had eight operations. You've had
six or seven operations
on like waist down.
Both had a cheekbone, done my wrists, knees,
shoulders,
three ankles,
backs. Back is the one that definitely gets you the most now. It's got perforated discs. So, you've had a lot more epidurals than me.
Yeah.
I've had a few epidurals, but like it's just one of those things that like you can't fix it, so you got to try and stay on top of it all the time. Yeah. So even now, like...
Is it like labour? They read you something that says you may never walk again just as
they're
Oh my God! Remind yourself how many people have them every day in the world. And
after the eighth time, you go, ah, you're joking.
I'll take it.
But what's the like recovery time like? Is it quite, not depressing, that's the wrong word, but I can imagine it's quite tough, like when you can't get out there and do anything and you're just sort of not waiting around because I guess there's still physio and stuff, but it must be tough.
Yeah, it is. That's probably the darkest thing about professional sport is, first of all, you can get injured and effectively not play again any day of the week.
Yeah.
In training, it doesn't even have to be in one of the big games, does it?
It happens in training, like, all the time. Lads get injured, do the ACLs in training.
Like, an ACL is the big knee ligament, and that will put you out for 9 months, up to a year. Like, as soon as you do that...
Another brother just had that up.
Yeah.
And do you still get paid as you would normally if you're injured? It's not like they're like, oh, you're not playing the big games, so you're sort of
a good
demoted.
Club will pay you throughout. So there'll be contracts, you know, and they might reduce it by half, a third or something. But
the big risk off the back of that is, like if you're not playing for 9 months and your full contract's up, you can struggle to find a club.
Yeah.
So it's also the timing of the injuries. If you've got a 3-year contract, you get one at the start, then you'll probably be okay. But who's going to
What's the longest you had off?
About 6 months, I think.
It's a long time.
What, for a cruciate or something?
A shoulder for me.
Yeah. I've had 8, which are basically 3 or 4 months at a time. So it's quite... Not like you're... Yeah, I was lucky that we didn't do an ACL or something. That is such... I mean, and the rehab for that is like mundane stuff and you're doing it all day.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly hard. And like swimming. You're not... Yeah, that sort of stuff, but like leg holds, all these sort of boring bits which are, and you don't get to see it with your friends, like, you know, it's all like you're watching in the distance, you're kind of, you know that person who comes in and laughs at a joke which she doesn't really hear most of it, you're like that person the whole time.
Oh, that makes
sense. Like, no,
you had to be there.
You had to be there. Piss off.
Yeah, and the guys are really sympathetic in moments like that.
Oh, no. They are. So I dislocated my finger once, and it was like off on an angle like that. And this was in training, and I was like, at the side of the field, like, oh, that hurts a bit. And you get like Mako, you get a load of players being like, oh, what are you doing? Get back on. I was like, well, mate, I've dislocated my finger. It was like that. And about 10 of them roll on the floor laughing. And like, you know, I was just thinking, Kirsty, I had a brand in office, did that, dislocated a finger, and like, me and Dom was like, you would never be able to do that. Like, it wouldn't
she'd
be.
Leave.
She'd probably leave. And,
she's nodding. It's a yes. Yeah. Is there mental support in those moments? Is it more softly these days? Because I feel men are more in touch with their feelings and you know, more sensitive than they were. But I can totally see that, dude. Man, I can't get back on the pitch with your finger, but you're then off for however long. Is there support?
There is, and a huge change, really. Especially from probably when we started.
And you can see that.
Big time, yeah. And I think like a lot of it is driven because obviously like a club or a business will always want the best, you know, because they're paying people, they want the best out of them. So I think the biggest like change in the last 10 years, a lot of it has been like how physically big you can get. I think
they don't want you to get that physically.
No, as in like improvements maybe in 10 years before were... physical, you know, you've got GPSs, you're tracking everything, your weight's lifting. I think now the biggest improvements you can get from athletes and people in business and so on is like how you can look after that mental side of them. You can build a player up for 10 years and you can lose them in 2 months if they don't feel worthy, they don't feel, you know, they succumb to pressure and all that sort of stuff. So
does that happen much in rugby?
It does, yeah. You see people lose their head, you do, and definitely more and more now, I think. Like, people are a lot more aware. But, yeah, they've got some good programs in place, like the RPA, the Rugby Players Association. They're doing some good things. There is good programs, but it's one of those things you can always do more. And I think we were lucky to be part of a club, Saracens, which, like, really pride itself on good culture, helping players off-field. You know, if people had family issues or whatever, that, you know, they'd be, like, the forefront of everything. They'd make sure that they're sorted for.
Big up for Saracens.
Yeah.
And tell us, what's your rugby career highlight? What's the coolest thing you did? Moment? Game?
For me, it was travelling and playing abroad. Like, it was obviously, like, playing for Wales was great. I didn't get anywhere near as many caps as George, but Like, I made the decision to go and travel and see the world, live in Japan, live in Australia, and using rugby as a vehicle to do that, really. Because a lot of players just stay at the same club or in England or in Wales for the whole careers. And I was just like, sod that. I want to experience
something. Get out the valleys, didn't you?
Get out the valleys, yeah. I made it out, thank goodness.
George?
I'd echo that, really. Like, the ability to go to, say, a tournament, a World Cup in Japan or wherever it is, and have like 30 or 40 of your friends and family come out, see you play, but also like you can see they're getting a benefit that they would never have got if, you know, if you didn't go and do those sort of things.
Pretty close to watch your son or your... Can we talk about the money? It's not football, right?
Hell for no way. No.
Sadly not. Is it well paid?
I'd say it'd be well paid. Like, there is like a danger element to it. Like, you need to be paid enough for it to make sense. I think a lot of players towards the end of their career will go, right, I've got a figure, and if it's not over that, then it's not worth breaking bones and all those sort of things. So that there is that side of it. I think it's an honest wage for what we do.
What's the average wage?
It's 120 in the Premiership.
I think an average
120 a year.
Yeah.
An average Premiership player would be, I think, maybe about 120. An average international might be 250, and then you'd get international money as well. So it might be sort of 400-500, and then a top one might be.
It's like any sport, though. It's like you've got the top 1% who'd be in double or triple that. Like, you know, golfers, tennis players, football's a bit different because there's a volume of people in huge money. But like, in rugby, there is people in big money, but like, it's enough to live a very nice lifestyle, but then bang, it's cut off in
then
10 years.
When I rang my brother and said, so how we've been introduced to 4-5, my brother works for Be Military Fit, and you're doing some stuff with him, which is great, I hear. I said, tell me some juicy secrets. Sadly, I interviewed Jamie Lang and got the same, asked him the same question, and I got a story about Jamie streaking across a pitch at a game. He said they were really smart and sort of forward-thinking, is that the right word, about what was going to happen next, and that you didn't wait until you were cut off. You had your plan. The love, hate, I'm guessing we're past the hate now.
It's all love. It's all love.
Frogs.
It's all a bit too much love.
And that's pretty very close. How did you come together in terms of, you know, your next career, and how long ago did you start working on it? What point did you come up with 4-5? Did you do any sponsorship or anything before that?
Yeah, look, I think...
How does it work? Because someone said it's like, capped and it's quite hard for rugby players.
I think what he's getting at probably was a salary cap, and that's like a club saying, as a group of players, you can't pay them more than this. In terms of commercial stuff, you're allowed to do, you know, whatever you want.
Right.
But yeah, I think the salary cap was something which kind of pinned a certain, you know, it puts a ceiling on your actual salary that you can earn, but... It's there's nothing too bad in that.
So how did 4-5 come about?
Well, as we were talking about injuries, we were injured, and you're talking about what happens when you're injured and where's your mindset at. Like, we were both injured at the same time. 2018 was it?
2018, yeah, January.
We just kind of stumbled across. We were looking for something just to help us recover, right? Because you do the same thing every time you're injured. It's just like physio.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Ice baths. gym, ice bath, the floor and stuff. Yeah, ice bath, brutal. And CBD had just been made legal in sport because it was banned up until 2018. So we had a little chat and we gave it a go and we just saw really great benefits, really, in terms of like recovery, sleep, and the time it took us to get back out on the pitch. So
who suggested CBD?
Dom.
Had you just been reading up about it and vaguely interested?
Our personalities are a little bit different, right? I will jump sort of headfirst into anything and give it a go, whereas George is a little more reluctant. So
I'll see if he sink or swim, and then I'll join him.
Probably with my hands and a nice canoe.
So I saw it, got it straight away.
You like, give it a go. Let me know.
Yeah.
I was like, George, like, this is actually working. I was like, you should give this a crack. And he gave it a go.
And what form were you taking it in?
So this is another thing. I read about it, and then I was walking down the street about an hour after, and I saw it in a vape shop.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I bet it was in one of those, dodgy-looking ones.
I don't smoke, I don't vape, and I just saw it, and I was like, I want to try it, and this is the first time I've come across it, so I'm going to get it. I bought, like, a vaporizer pen and everything.
Oh, yeah.
I started vaping it, and it actually worked really well.
And to be clear, this is THC-free.
Yeah.
This is not cannabis in a cannabis shop. This is CBD.
No. It's CBD, fully legal in the UK.
Yeah.
It's all legit.
And I'm chatting to Kirsty, your head of brand.
Yes.
Keys here in Nine. I said, I actually know a little bit about CBD, having interviewed Chanel McCoy.
Yeah.
His husband is Tony McCoy. And he is, I mean, you think you've had a lot of...
They're phenomenal. I honestly reckon they're the best athletes in the
jockeys.
World. They are
the bravest athletes.
I've seen a jockey.
I saw a newspaper article of like what he'd done, and it was like pretty much every bone in his body had been fair play to him. Like the risk there is
he's mega
phenomenal.
Yeah, he's mega. Well, his wife has a business in the CBD space, and it's synthetic, and the reason it's synthetic is you can't extract. It's hard to extract pure CBD and not, because the cannabis plant has so many properties, this is my knowledge from her, it's hard to extract pure CBD and not have traces of THC in it. And when I was talking to Kirsty, and she said, the way that we extract it is, so I feel like I need you to answer that question, because I've always said, right, I really get purists and what they do, and what 4-5 does equally kind of acknowledges that challenge, right?
Yeah.
We use
a CBD isolate. So there's an extraction method, without going into too much of science, CO2 extraction. We use that to strip out the other cannabinoids. Now, it's 99.99999% pure CBD. Now, she is right in what she's saying, is that there's not really many tests that can test down to a low enough level to find the other cannabinoids. So essentially, it is pure CBD. We're fine calling it pure CBD isolate.
Yeah.
But we go, because of the testing aspect for athletes, we go to an extra level and we get it tested. We send it over to America. We get it tested by a sports testing company in America, which tests down as low as you can. And we only put batches out that are THC-free, CBD only.
So you've dealt with that challenge. And actually, what fascinated me about interviewing Chanel was, you know, her talking about some of the athletes, like Mike Tyndall, I know, is a massive fan of CBD products. And she listed off Matthew Vaughan. I mean, like a load of athletes. So it is really interesting. And I remember someone saying, how can one product help with sleep and depression and recovery? And I think Chanel described it was that it almost like it's like a magnet that's attracted to the part of you, of your body or your system that's weak.
Your body has what's called an endocannabinoid system. So this is the sciencey bit.
I'm impressed.
And you have like...
Dr. Dom.
You have...
George isn't saying a word. He's like, hey, over to you. They aren't science questions.
You have like what we call CB1 and CB2 receptors. So they are all over the body. They're in the brain, in your joints, in your organs, your vital organs. And your body actually creates cannabinoids itself. So what we're doing when we take CBD is we're just topping it up. We're keeping it going. So that's it. You get it in, boost it, give it a bit of a spark up.
Fascinating. Mm-hmm. So you started taking it, you were the dummy, and George said, you know, let me know.
Wait.
No, and you found it really effective.
Yeah.
And then sort of what happened next?
Well, we just thought, right, well, because in America, it was quite a big thing, and especially we see like a lot of athletes taking it over there in 2018.
Right.
It was pretty like, it was just like when we go to look at the shop for CBD for us to take, it was like, okay, we're not really trusting that product based off exactly what Chanel was saying. But then also, you know, it's quite big in America, so we just thought there's a good opportunity here where really we can come out with a very tested product that we're happy with, that we can work alongside the governing bodies of our sport and keep them up to date with what we're doing. Because there's a huge market of people that want to take CBD. You know, there's probably like five people in every club that were really interested at the time in that. But just that risk reward wasn't there for them. We just sort of got in a room and thought, right, let's create a company.
Yeah, I would love to tell you that we did loads of market research and we knew that the market was going to grow. It was more luck than judgment, wasn't it? It was like 100%, we had time on our hands because we were injured and we liked the product. We wanted to make something that was safe, trusted, and we were just like, let's just do it. It was easy, one of those things. The amount of conversations you have in the change rooms, right? Yeah. I think we probably all have these conversations of like, wouldn't it be awesome if we did that? And then it just
build
like,
a house on moon. Mental ideas.
It's just like, you go on and you just don't do it. But it was the one thing that we actually actioned and did it.
Yeah.
So well, it's like, we had an idea, we actioned it, we did it, and then...
We set up a company name on company's house like the next day, and then it was like, oh, we've got to do this now. This is awkward if we don't do it.
How did you build that trust with other players and athletes and clubs then? Because like you say, back in 2018, not everyone was taking it, or it was still quite new being legal over here. Like, how did you kind of get it out there?
Yeah, the biggest thing was the level of testing we do with our product. There are cowboys in the market, and I think with our background, the fact that, you know, we're professional athletes whilst still creating
that's massive
cannabis
endorsement.
And I think we used to get tested. As an athlete, you probably get tested 3 or 4 times a year. The moment we set up a cannabis-based company, we got tested like 10 times
a year.
So, so we had to, like, you know, we were putting ourselves online, and I think with that, it meant that we had to go to that level of testing and that level of quality of product that we were comfortable with. And off the back of that, and having spoken and kept like a lot of the governing bodies in the loop of what we're doing, they were intrigued. You know, they want stuff that can help players, which is less painkillers, all those sort of things. Like, they are interested in that as well. So I think it was a bit of a, keeping them informed was big, but also the level of testing was huge.
And you're approved by?
Unions or authorities won't really approve people's supplements. It's more that we've gone and got our products tested by a quite legitimate, well-known testing body.
Okay.
And then, but also, like I said, we kept the RFU, we kept the RPA, which are like the governing bodies, aligned with what we're doing, and the comms were pretty high.
And what is the product range? So talk us through what 4-5 offers.
So we started with a range of CBD products, which are more like topicals, which like your maybe a muscle rub, which is menthol, all 100% natural. We've got like a deep heat one as well with CBD.
Is that like a deep heat?
Yeah. So we've got a hot and a cold one, which are actually both really nice.
Do they smell better than deep heat?
No.
Oh, I like the smell of deep heat.
Yeah, see, this is exactly what we get. Yeah. So we'll get maybe one customer be like, oh, it's kind of smelly, isn't it? And another one will be like, give it to me.
I love it.
Deep heat. Shower me. Yeah.
Oh, it's like a sweaty coach on the way back from the lacrosse match.
That's exactly it. And then really like a year after, we started looking at what else we were taking from a non-CBD point of view.
So there's the rub, the topical rubs, in terms of the CBD.
CBD,
products,
rubs. We've got tinctures and all, so the oils, which either drop under your tongue or spray. And they're sort of the probably the go-to if you're looking at getting involved in.
They're sort of beginner ones, aren't they, I suppose,
I love that you're these two quite big rug because there's a tincture under your tongue, a spray, it's a bit tropical. I mean, it's not, you're like quite big guys and you're sitting there talking about tinctures. That's awesome. Like,
yes, 2022, we're trying to open up, you know?
No, I think that's great, but I just, it's not what you know, it's just not what you would expect to hear from rugby players. Like, amazing that it's... You know, it's having such an impact that your tincture's working.
We won't go as far as eye masks, but...
Don't knock an eye mask. So, tinctures...
Tinctures, capsules and topicals are the three main ones. I think if you are looking to start, then I'd start with a tincture.
And look, they're not just for athletes. They are for everybody.
Yeah.
what are they, you know, CBD is this amazing kind of capsule. And I think that's why people are so skeptical about it a lot. Cause, you know, I think we're over the fact that people aren't selling cannabis in a capsule and calling it a supplement. Like, I think that's not what's happening. But then you hear this, well, it helps all these things.
There's too much overselling. There's too much sort of overhype, I think. I'm often quite critical of other companies of claim in the world.
But for people who are listening, what symptoms have they got that makes CBD? I mean, I remember Chanel saying that the CBD market was already bigger than this vitamin C and vitamin D market combined. And when I interviewed Chanel, only 10% of the UK population were using CBD versus something like 90% using vitamin C. It kind of blew my mind. Like,
it's that's a big
the
market,
size of the market and how much research and science and, you know, NPDs going on from pharmaceuticals and that. Like, it's huge. And I kind of can't stress that.
Yeah, it's a massive market. And I think, coming from sports backgrounds, and we kind of use CBD from a recovery point of view. We've got quizzes on our website, so we collect, obviously, companies collect data in terms of surveys and so on. Blown away by who and what people are using our products for. And the top one is, it is women and anxiety. So we've got surveys, and then from there, it's sort of sleep, and then category of person is people using it for recovery.
But
the big one is anxiety, and that's something which, you know,
God, if women are using it for anxiety, so should men be. And
I know,
Well, no, they are.
It was just like the top category.
I think it might be men just can't be bothered to do the quiz on our website.
Yeah. We know about doing stuff like that, that's probably very true.
That's so funny.
But also, that's off the back, like 2 years of COVID, right? Whereas, like, that's spiked massively.
Yeah, definitely.
Amazing.
Yeah, you do see that.
So you did that, and then you've launched other things, though, that aren't CBD since then.
Yeah.
So what are they, and when did you launch those?
So we kind of looked at what we were taking throughout our careers, as in, from a supplement perspective, vitamins, essentially. Mm-hmm. So we asked our formulator and doctor just to have a look at these. Is there anything we can do better? And we haven't reinvented the wheel. Like, we've gone with, at the minute, a pretty basic range of vitamin C's, D's, omega fish oils, biotic. But it's actually quite shocking what is in many vitamins on a supermarket shelf or a pharmacy shelf. Mm. Like, the ingredients, the one that really sort of hit home for me and really sort of made me want to develop this range is, like, they use chalk in so many supplements, like actual, like, chalk.
I can believe that because they've got that, like, crumbly sort of drying quality.
It's calcium carbonate, whereas, you know, and that's like passes through. It doesn't.
Yeah.
It's there just to tick. You've got calcium in your thing, and it's like, say, you got 100% of the NRV. It's the daily recommended dosage, basically.
Okay, great.
To get a health benefit. So calcium ascorbate is something which is obviously it's a bit more expensive, but it can get absorbed, and it, like, that's the big difference. Where you look at a load of things that are just done for marketing, and you look at 90% of the products on a retail shelf, it's all those sort of things, well, just for marketing.
The bare minimum of every ingredient, to say
rather
it's in
like
there.
What's absorbable, what actually will make a difference. And I think our nutritionist always says, like, the most expensive supplement you'll get is the one you don't absorb.
So we've got CBD products, your tinctures, your vitamins, and then dehydration tablets come next.
Yeah, so we've got a range of new product development coming out. It's all geared at wellness, really. And hydration is a big one, which, so many people are dehydrated, and it's like the average person will get up, have a coffee or a tea, which is a diuretic, which will make you wee more. You'll then maybe go to the gym, and you'll be, you know, you will be dehydrated. You won't get the maximum out of your gym session. You will get, or you might go to a business meeting, and
so if you're exercising, I mean, I'm someone who always told that my skin's really dehydrated, and I'm terrible at drinking water, trying to be better.
Yeah.
Are you saying that your workout's less effective if you've
been 100%. Loads of studies on it.
Why is that?
Because your muscles have less water in, and they just don't perform optimally. It's kind of like, if you're 1% or 2% dehydrated, then your concentration can be up to like 30% off. Like, those sort of things, as well as, you know, your recovery time, all those sort of bits. But a lot of people focus on nutrition and be like, okay, if I'm going to go do a big run, then I need to, you know, I'll probably eat lots of pasta or whatever it is, like the basic side of that. Like, a lot of people don't focus on hydration. So as an athlete, we would go in every morning. Part of, like, your daily thing is, you're a bit crude. You'd pee into a small little cup. You'd pour it on this, like, machine that measures how hydrated you are. And if you're dehydrated to a point where it will come up with a number and it will get flash, then you are pulled from training because your risk of injury is so high. So for us, like creating a product where and trying to educate people that if you are dehydrated, and there'll be a pee chart, and really if your pee is sort of orange and you look at it in the morning, you're a lot less effective in terms of actually in your gym session or in your business meeting or whatever you're in.
This is true. This is really true. I mean, take your hydration tablets the last couple of weeks. My skin has been so much better. True story. True story.
Yeah.
This is not an ad. So when I was in Mexico on holiday this summer, and workout is my thing, and they had hydration tablets in the gym we went in, and the guy there was like, basically said they're really good to take. And I read on the back, and I thought, okay. And I took them the whole 10 days we were there, and I felt like they were doing something. It's like, it's hard to do a better test, isn't it? But and I thought, I must get some of those when I go back to the UK. Never really seen them here.
Mm.
And then 4 or 5 come along, and now they're back in my life. Genuinely, kind of sent some in. I think they're great.
Yeah.
I was really ashamed to my husband. I think someone in our team said they're good before a night out. But I mean, just if you don't drink enough water, just that in itself, like take hydration tablets, right?
How do they work?
They've got there's like 4 key salts and electrolytes. Mm.
So it's like electrolytes, like if you've had the shirts.
It's exactly the same.
Yeah. You take electrolytes, don't you, and rebalances.
Yeah, like when you go out and you have a hangover, the hangover is because beer is a diuretic. You'll wee more and you take up the salts and you don't hold water. So having like a diuretic or it basically puts salts and electrolytes in your muscles, in your body, so that when you take on water, it holds it better rather than just... As a base level, people should be drinking. I think you should wake up and have a pint of water immediately at the beginning of the day.
I do actually now. Mm. I've trained myself to the minute I get up.
Yeah. And we'd like that's installed in us. Morning. Yeah. Well, that's installed with us because if we didn't do that and we turned up to training and our wee was off, like, you know, dehydrated, then we wouldn't be able to train. And that
so did you take electrolytes?
Yeah,
100%,
yeah.
And now you've come out with these hydration tablets?
Yeah, well, it's kind of back to our thing where we looked at the products we were taking when we played, because our whole range, everything we try is 100% natural, all our products. Like, no artificial flavouring, like, no nasties.
Tastes good, though. I like it.
It does taste nice, doesn't it?
It's like black... Is it blackcurrant?
Yeah.
It's nicer than blackcurrant.
And it's also... I don't know if you've ever had any other hydration tablets.
I have. Well, the ones in Mexico.
They tend to leave like a little layer of sediment in the bottom and then like bubbles around the lid. That's something that we really
like
didn't
Barocca
want.
Does. Yeah.
Exactly.
So we've kind of worked hard on that one. It took us a year or so to get it right, to make it like nice, clean, nice tasting.
And you can have, I was reading on the back the other day because I had 2 and I thought, ooh, is that what I overdosed on? Hydration tablets. It says you have up to 4 a day. Is that excessive?
No, not at all.
Does it do anything negative if you have too much?
I mean, you just want to watch how much salt you're taking in a day. Like, it's quite a simple proposition, a hydration tablet. But if you are sweating or if you have been drinking the night before or, you know, you're dehydrated, the quickest and best way is to have salts and electrolytes. And that's all it is. It's just giving you an option to absorb water quicker and hold it for longer. Okay.
4 or 5 hydration tablets are not, they're not, it's not like an Alka-Seltzer. It's not like that salty. You know, when you have a diuretic and it's, I down it.
Yeah.
Yours don't taste like that. They taste like a vitamin C effervescent tablet. Do you know what I mean?
They're clean. Yeah. And they're, like Dom said, a lot of them will have artificial sweeteners. We've gone for natural sweeteners. Mm. And a lot of that sediment at the bottom might be your calcium carbonate, that chalk stuff that we talked about earlier. But.
Amazing. Well, big fan, Heather. You need to get them in.
I was going to say, I need to do some more exercise first, I think.
But the whole point is, they're not just people.
No. Yeah, like, if I've got a big meeting or something where I know I need to be pretty on point for, or if I've, you know, been out the night before and I'll get home, bang one of them quickly and it kind of takes the sting off the hangover.
They've rammed the B vitamins as well, which...
Yeah.
Naturally.
Oh yeah, I'm always told you need to take more of those. Yeah.
So is that the range?
So at the moment, and we've got a few more just coming out shortly, so we'll keep you updated.
And
is it going really well?
It's going surprisingly well. it's like the blind leading the blind. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Well, we're honest.
Well, that's why you got Kirsty.
Yeah. Exactly, we've got somebody to see.
We are sometimes brutally honest, which probably comes from being a sportsman, because you have to be.
Yeah.
But we've made a lot of mistakes and we continue to do it. But I think what we've started to learn just by talking to more experienced businessmen is Everyone is faking it and going and making mistakes. But one thing that we do is we just keep going. It's kind of instilled in us. You just keep going until we get it right. And things are starting to come good now, which is great. Yeah.
Slowly, slowly, less mistakes. But
Yeah.
Amazing. You don't learn if you don't make mistakes.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Can we just touch on Foxy?
Yes. So you work with him. How did that all come about? Lots of listeners will know him from SAS, Who Dares Wins.
Yeah, lovely guy. We actually did a spa day the other day with some eye masks.
Of course you did. So you belong in a spa dressing gown.
Lovely guy, likes his rugby, known each other for a good few years now. And we've got a wide range of investors, and he's part of the company, but also, you know, leads on an ambassador front as well.
But I think that's really interesting, and it's a good person to have, because I suppose people also think, like, sport, the military, you're going to get drugs tested here, there and everywhere, and you don't know when it's going to happen. So again, it's interesting that, CVD going down that military route as well, I'm sure that can help with all sorts of pressures and injuries that way as well.
His story's actually interesting. I'm going to let George tell us one, because he was involved in it, how we got into 4-5.
He's a guy who's very in touch with sort of his mental health side. He's obviously been through a lot being a serving member of the forces. I think we just reached out and gave him some CBD. I mean, there's not a big story behind it, but, you know, he got real good benefits off the back of it.
He gets it. He likes it.
Yeah, he gets it. He likes
it. He's invested. He's
bought into it, yeah. But he's interesting for us because he is like a macho guy, but also he's very in tune, like I said, with his mental health side. And I think it's important to share those sort of messages clearly. Mm. But coming from maybe quite manly backgrounds, you know, it's nice to have someone like that who can open up as well.
Mm.
It's amazing to hear your story. It's great to meet. Really fun to chat. For people listening who are interested in 4-5, where can they get it? They can get it online at 4-5.com.
4-5.com. We're available in Boots, Tesco. Well, we're going to Holland & Barrett in a couple of weeks.
Oh, that's great.
Which is a big one.
That's huge news for a CBD brand or a wellness brand.
And for us, it's
number one, right?
It's huge. Yeah.
That's awesome. So
really, and they've been, along with Boots and Tesco's, they've been really good with us in terms of, we are growing, we are learning, and they've been really good in terms of pointing us in the right directions and sort of making sure that we all get the best out of the relationship. So. Kudos to them.
Amazing. Kudos to you. It sounds like the future is bright. The future needs 4-5 in it. And Heather, you need to get some hydration tablets. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. Fascinating to chat. And thanks, Heather. That's it for today. If you enjoyed that, then do please rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends to listen to. And we'll be back soon. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having us. It's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.